This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
The 2-2. Swing and a miss. He struck out. His hand goes down. That's 8 strikeouts.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
First pitch to him. Line back up the middle, but there is Franco. To the left of the bag, he turns and throws him out, and the Rays have won it in Atlanta.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Welcome to our latest show and week 4 of a history-making 2023 season so far. On today's program, we'll speak with Josh Lowe about his terrific start and that of the team. I'll chat about Dave Wills with Andy Fried, his longtime broadcast partner. We'll discuss Jackie Robinson Day with Rays VP Stephen Thomas, who heads up the team's diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. And we'll talk with third base coach Brady Williams about the team's unique home run celebrations.
Well, we continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and our featured guest this week is one Josh Lowe. Josh, we appreciate a few minutes.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
You have obviously gotten off to a tremendous start. What do you attribute it to, and how much more comfortable are you now than, let's say, a year ago?
A lot more comfortable. I think that's pretty apparent. I think being able to be around all the guys and just be yourself and not worrying about trying to be somebody that you're not, that plays a big role in it. Being able to actually take a deep breath when you're in the box instead of, you know, feeling like, you know, you're searching for something, just staying within yourself and doing your job.
That doesn't happen, though, overnight. So was there, when you walked in, though, in spring training, did you feel different about yourself, about the situation, than, let's say, at the same time a year ago?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I was ready for whatever life was about to throw at me. I worked really hard in the off season. You know, I stayed in touch with Motor and other Rays personnel, you know, to be the best equipped I can coming into the season and ready to go and you know, do the things that I'm doing now. So, and I also felt like they put that same trust and faith in me to put me in a position to be ready for the season and be able to be where I'm at right now. So it works both ways. But yeah, I'm very thankful for the hot start that I've been off to and just trying to keep it going.
You have to be your own biggest advocate. When you finished the year, what did you kind of say, okay, what do I need to do to kind of make that step? Because obviously you believed you were capable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, my second stint when I got recalled, I really started to, you know, get a feel for what was going on. Just the circumstances of what happened, everything last year, going out and making trades was kind of one of the reasons why I got sent down. But before I got sent down, I felt like I was, you know, able to be here and belong. And I think I kind of took that mentality and took everything to AAA and just kept working hard and, you know, get better at the things I needed to get better on and just carried over into this year.
Were the trades motivational in any way? For some guys, it can work that way in a positive way to get you going for this year.
Yeah. the simple way to put it, yes. You know, being a competitor, being someone who's always won for most of my minor league career, you know, I want to be that guy in the situation that can help the team win. I don't want to feel like a liability. So yeah, I kind of took that personally and, you know, do what I can to be out there on the field every single night and help the team win.
So from a fan standpoint, walk us through what you did that got you ready and what are the differences, starting with your swing?
In the off season, we, as in me, Motor, and a few other Rays people, we went to the facility in Marucci. Did a bat fitting. I know we've talked about that some. And for my swing, tailored a bat that was the most comfortable for me and what would, I guess, give me the best edge to compete. The difference, I would say, is my setup this year. My hands are starting more relaxed on my shoulder. From there, I can just, you know, like I said, take a deep breath in the box instead of worrying about so many other things. I can just relax and focus on what I need to focus on for that at bat. So that's the biggest changes I'd say I've made, and just being aggressive early in counts.
As someone who does golf, and I know you do, did that help with that whole process, kind of understanding the idea of a golf club and a baseball bat?
It did. You know, you, whatever sport you're playing, you know, or even simpler, you want to wear shoes that are the right size for your feet. You know, so if I'm swinging a bat, that's the right size for me. If I'm swinging a golf club, that's the right fit to my swing, whatever you're looking at. You know mentally you're prepared with the best equipment tailored to your body. And so that's what I felt like the Edge is kind of giving me, going to Marucci and finding those things. And, you know, who knows if that's really what the biggest factor is so far in the success, but it's definitely helped gain a little bit of confidence from that.
I know you take good care of yourself, but did you change anything with diet or exercise or anything else on the physical end of things?
Not really. I pride myself on working hard in the weight room in the off season, and I think the biggest thing coming into this year is trying to just be more consistent in the weight room during the season. Everybody feels good in April, May, but the months that really matter are, you know, the dog days of summer, as I like to say, August, September, October, when it really matters. So the more work you put in early, hopefully that's going to be, you know, the more beneficial it can be in the back end of the season.
So what kind of weight work do you do during the year? Do you do more when you're not starting? Do you do more when you have a night game versus a day game? How do you kind of balance it out? Because everyone needs their own routine.
Yeah. A day like today, I'm not starting in the game, so I was able to get a total body lift in. You know, I feel like that's going to keep me fresh for today, tomorrow, the next few days, and then until it's time to get in the weight room and get another lift in. But yeah, I mean, I feel great right now. I think, like I said, getting in the weight room, keeping my body strong, keeping my muscles right, doesn't necessarily mean going in there and doing a max lift, but, you know, just touching different muscle groups and keeping it going.
And then from a mental side, do you have a lot of conversations with Justin? I know for a lot of guys, he's been really helpful. Other guys have their own routine.
Yeah, Sue is the best. Plain and simple, you know, anything you want to talk to with him, you can go and just put it out there, and he helps you. Just keeping it simple with him is kind of been one of the biggest things that we've talked about. But other than that, mentally, just having fun with the team that you're with, really learning your teammates, who they are as people on and off the field is a big contributor to this team. Building relationships with the different guys that, you know, you might necessarily not always be around. So like I said, just being a good teammate and learning everybody and just having a good time.
One of those teammates you were very close to last year is Luke Raley, and he's also having success. Does that help that the two of you are close and also close in the lineup usually and usually in the outfield also?
It does, because we've seen a lot of each other. You know, we can bounce ideas off each other, and, you know, maybe he feels more comfortable saying something to me that he wouldn't feel as comfortable saying to somebody else, or vice versa. I can say things to him that I wouldn't feel like saying to anybody else. So it's always good to have someone you've been close with and played a lot with to bounce those ideas off and see what's working for you or working for them that day.
You also, you mentioned Chad Mottola, Motor, but there are also a couple coaches you know really well, beginning with Brady Williams. How much has he helped you this year so far?
A lot. And the cool thing is he's been the same guy that I've known since, I guess, the first time I really worked with him was 2020. Been the same exact coach. So that's been huge. He's seen me in my ups and my downs, you know, and he knows what it takes to keep that level of consistency throughout the entire season. So to see him and to have him not be a different guy just because he's in the big leagues, you know, that's been awesome.
I've heard you guys have changed your home run high five over time.
Yeah.
You want to share?
the
PG version?
Yeah, the GPG rated version of that story. He always messed with my brother and told him that when he hit a home run, he didn't high five him hard enough. And so then Brady started poking at me a little bit and telling me I didn't hit hard enough either. And so there's one time in 21 where I came around third and slapped his hand so hard he couldn't feel it until the next day. He told me we got to change up the celebration. So that's the story. And needless to say, we don't slap for high fives anymore.
So it's now a salute?
Yeah, it was a salute. Now it's kind of the L symbol that we've been rolling with. So yeah,
that'll work too.
That'll work.
When you're not playing baseball, what do you do to keep your mind free and relaxed too? Because I think that's important in a long year.
Yeah, I like to play video games. Playing video games or just relaxing, trying to find something to watch on TV, YouTube, Netflix, whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, I enjoy, you know, watching highlights of other games and seeing how people around the league are doing. You know, catching up with my friends who are also playing, whether it's in the big leagues or AAA or wherever it is. But just trying to keep in touch with other people too. You know, baseball is what we do as a sport, but at the same time, we also have lives outside of baseball. Just maintain relationships on and off the field with a lot of different people.
So current video game of choice is?
Bouncing back and forth between PGA 2K23 and Apex Legends. It's good games.
And do you play against anyone here in the clubhouse, or is it other teammates, former teammates, far and wide?
In PGA, I've got Wall's number right now. He can't compete, and I let him in the door yesterday. I had a bad round, but other than that, there's no chance he can beat me.
Binging TV shows right now. What are you watching?
My girlfriend and I watched White Lotus. We finished that. It was good, but I don't necessarily recommend it to people. So that was an easy one to watch, but I'm currently in the hunt for something new to watch.
You're not watching Ted Lasso? Or
I haven't gotten into it, but I might give it a try.
All right. How often do you chat with your brother, Nathaniel, or Nate, depending on who knows him? And is it ever about baseball, or is it never about baseball now?
We chat when we're on the same schedule, put it that way. Baseball is, I know how busy it can be for him. He knows how busy it can be for me. So, yeah, we're on the same schedule. It's easy to chat, or it's easy to give him a call on the way to the field, vice versa. But, no, it's not always about baseball. Sometimes it is. You know, maybe we've just played a team before them, or they've just played a team before us. He wants to share a tip here or there. But at the end of the day, he's still my brother. It doesn't necessarily mean we always talk about baseball.
What will it mean when the two of you finally play on the same field together at the big league level?
I'm not sure. We'll find out when we get there. But I know one thing for sure. There's going to be a lot of people in the stands for both of us. And I know we can't wait to make all of them proud being on the same field together, even though we're not in the same jersey. But it's going to be awesome.
Will that be a prouder moment for you, your brother, or your dad? And why?
I think my mom and dad, really. You know, we have gotten to the point now where we expect that to happen. But I think for both of my parents to see us on the same field at the same time, I know they're going to be emotional. But they're just going to enjoy every single moment of it, and just it's going to be so much fun.
When was the last time that happened? How old were you?
I think when we played together in high A. On the Charlotte Stone Crabs was the last time, so that'd be 2018. Yep.
What's one thing you have over your brother? He's got age. Yeah. What do you have over him?
Looks. speed. Looks. Other than that, I mean, he's pretty talented at what he does. But I don't know.
Are you going to have a podcast like him?
I don't know. I'm just trying to get on his podcast. So we'll see if I can make it on his podcast first, and then we'll talk about that if I can get a podcast.
So he hasn't even invited you yet?
Not yet. I think it's very Rangers specific at the moment, which I understand. Not being a Ranger, yeah, I don't see myself getting the invite for a little bit, but maybe they'll branch out and start having some other people on there.
Well, we have enjoyed watching the way you have gotten off to a really good start, and hopefully the two of you get united on his podcast and enjoy getting united during the season. Until then, hopefully this continues to be a really good year for you in the Rays.
Thank you, Neil.
That's Josh Lowe joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball. We will continue in just a moment. You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network. Well, we continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and we certainly appreciate the time in the last segment from Josh Lowe. And now joining me is Andy, first time on the show this year. And obviously, in light of the fact that yesterday was really an opportunity to celebrate Dave here at the ballpark, it made the most sense. Andy, thanks for coming on.
Who are you again? No, I'm kidding. You know Dave loved to tease, and every once in a while I try to pick up that mantle. I could never do it as well as he did, but hey, it's been an interesting year, and we know that our guy would have loved this start that the Rays are off to, so I like to think that we're carrying the torch, and as we've said a million times, he's here with us in the booth always.
Yeah, he is, certainly. And let's begin with this team. I mean, what has surprised you to this point? I mean, besides the record?
Dave and I would always say every year when we're doing our This Week in, or our Countdown to Opening Day shows that maybe this is the year that we have an offensive team that really breaks through. The Rays have been built on pitching and defense. You know, I get so tired of hearing people from around the country saying, what's the secret sauce for the Tampa Bay Rays? There's no secret sauce to it. Pitching and defense has been the basis for this franchise getting better, going back to even prior to 2008. But every year it'll be like, well, we just didn't quite score enough runs, I think with the exception of 2021. And they lost the first round of the playoffs anyway. This year, wow. I mean, this offense has been eye-opening. It has been so surprising to see just how good they've been. And it's not because they don't have good hitters, but I think there's been a really good buy-in that I know I didn't necessarily see coming because I think they've made a large jump in judgment of the strike zone. This is a team that has struck out a lot in recent years. They've cut down on that. They're accepting walks. You know, when this franchise turned from 07 to 08, it wasn't because they got so many people from outside the organization. It was because the ones that were already here, the core, got better. And I'm seeing this core get better. I'm seeing Yandy Diaz become a better hitter. I'm seeing Wander Franco grow as a hitter. I'm seeing Josh Lowe get better as a hitter. I'm seeing Brandon Lau being the kind of guy that he was prior to the back injury. So it's the core guys that are getting better. And that, to me, is the most exciting thing because I don't know if that necessarily goes away. I think the league will do their best to adjust to them. And I always say that once May comes, it's almost like a new season anyway because the scouting reports are out. But I'm seeing some things with this offense that leads me to believe that they may not hit a home run every day for 162, but there will be a threat from the top to the bottom of the order, and that can make teams special.
And the thing that you touched on there is really what Dave, many of the phrases that stick with me from him, and that's a year older or a year better, and we probably to this point have seen both.
It's what we were talking about when he was still with us in the early days of spring training this year, is let's see if they're a year older or a year better. Right now, they're both. They are definitely a year better. And again, it's the course of the major league season, so there will be slumps. There just always are. We have to brace ourselves for those inevitable moments. You and I have been saying to each other in the booth nonstop, the best teams lose 60 and the worst teams win 60. It's what you do with that other 42. There will be times that this team will be tested. Things have really come together in a best-case scenario here in the early parts of the year. But to be around them on an everyday, and as you know, Neil, it's a joy to be around a Major League Baseball team on an everyday basis. Kevin Cash, I think, has done a really good job to help lead this group into that old cliche of not being too high when you're winning, not being too low when you're losing. They weathered the two-game losing streak in Toronto. They weathered that first-game loss against Cincinnati when we were wondering, why does that team seem to have the Rays' number? So they're playing the schedule as it's in front of them, and I think it can be a really, really special year for this team, and obviously that's the year we've been waiting for since, 26 years ago.
Yeah, I'm sure Dave is up there smiling right now and enjoying every moment of this. He's been with us every day, as you mentioned. What stands out to you? Because you traveled with him every day. You were with him for 18 consecutive years for every single game.
There was nobody better to share a win with, and there was nobody better to commiserate after a loss with. He had that knack of being a really, really good listener. And sometimes I get excited in the booth, and I'll throw my pen when something doesn't go right. And he liked to point out every time I did. While he could be really loud on the air, folks, he really was a pretty laid-back guy and would take things in measure very, very well. I miss that on a day-by-day basis. And as you know, you're I'm sure missing it in many ways also. Dave was an experienced, very talented broadcaster, but he was a very loyal person as well. And his loyalty, and I know it's funny because we used to joke about, boy, you left Chicago the year before they won the World Series. Great career move. I look back now and he'd be thinking, my goodness, I'm gone and this team is coming up with the greatest year they've ever had, the greatest start this franchise has ever had. But you've felt his presence. I know I've felt his presence. His humor stays with us. His outlook on life, I think, stays with us. And look, you can't help but feel close to a guy after being with him for 18 years through good times and bad times. So my goal, Neil, has really been when I hear his name, to not be so sad. I'm not even close to being there yet because I'm missing him like crazy, and I know you are too, and I know the fans are too. But I want my long-term goal is for when his name gets brought up in subsequent years, my initial thought is joy and happiness, because that's the kind of guy. Were you ever around a happier guy? I mean, Dave really enjoyed living life and being around Rays baseball and sharing that with the fans.
You made that clear on Saturday, too, and obviously it was quite a moment with the fans that you shared on Saturday, on the day that he was appreciated here at the ballpark, involving the two teams that he knew the best, that he was involved with the most, from Chicago to Tampa Bay, and we're going to go back to Chicago again next week. It's going to be kind of strange in that regard.
Kind of. It's going to be really, really strange. And, you know, you got to know, folks, that Dave, a lot of Chicago never really did leave Dave. He loved to talk about being a boy that grew up on the South Side. That was very, very important to him. And when we'd go back, I would just try to hold on for dear life. I mean, there we always joke, Chico and I and Scott Kersey would joke that it was like the mayor was coming back, and it really was like that. And that's because Dave did the same things then that he did with the fans here of Tampa Bay. Whenever somebody would come up to him, it was never a brush off. It was always, I'm going to put my bag down and I'm going to talk to you for a little bit. When we'd be at autograph signing tables, it wasn't a, here, let me sign this and move along. It was, hey, what's your name? How long have you been a Rays fan? What do you love about coming to the Trop? He really was a master at connecting with people. And, you know, I remember the first day, actually, my wife was reminding me of this. I always think of meeting him for the first time at FanFest, but she reminded me the other day. She goes, you actually met him at a press conference that the Rays had for us in 2005. And that is right. That is the first time I had forgotten about that. But when I was thinking about it, when she reminded me of that, I remembered they had a press conference for Dave and I when we were hired in March of 2005. And the thing that his message was to the fans was, always feel comfortable coming up to me. I'm a fan with a microphone. That's the way he felt. He said that over and over again. And that was the message that he wanted to get out to everybody that was watching that press conference. And, boy, he held up to that standard. So when we do go back to Chicago, and interestingly, as time goes by, there are probably fewer and fewer people that are still there. Maybe they've moved around the country or whatever. But the people that are still with the White Sox and those fans that knew him back then, and the Bertucci brothers that run the grill out there, and all the other people in that area. He loves seeing them, and they love seeing him. And that never really went away over 18 years, and I hope it never does.
I hope it never does, too. You probably have some really funny stories, some that you can share on air, some that probably you can't. But is there one that sticks out to you when you think of Dave and really makes you smile? Because you said that's how we want to remember him the most.
The one, Neil, that always makes me smile and it makes me well up and I'll do my best to get through it is when the Rays clinched the postseason for the first time. That Saturday in September of 2008 was as great a day as this franchise has ever had, and that includes even the day they won the pennant. When it clinched going to the postseason, oh my goodness, this franchise is going to the postseason. And there were more great thrills to come, but you know, he called Evan Longoria running down the left field line. Longoria gets there. The crowd roars. The Rays are going to the postseason. And what I always remember about it most is, and I've never talked about it much because it always hits me right in the feels, as the kids say today. He put down his microphone and ran across the booth here and gave me this giant bear hug. And it gets me every time because it was such a pure and emotional moment. He was so happy that the Rays were going to the postseason, and it wasn't official until Evan caught it and until he said it. So that moment's always going to be there for me and for us. And every time I come into this booth, Neil, honestly, to this day, I think about this little middle section in the booth when he all but tackled me and it almost threw my back out because I wasn't expecting it. But it was such pure joy that, I mean, isn't that why we're in this business, to celebrate moments like that?
Well, he always said it's life's candy store that we work in. And we don't work. It's not work. It's play. We live in life's candy store is what he always said. And that's really what he wants us to continue to follow in his legacy in many ways.
He always told the story of Jack Brickhouse, the legendary Hall of Fame voice. The Chicago Cubs came up to him once when Dave was doing the games for Kane County Cougars in A-ball. And he said that Jack Brickhouse said to him, he goes, I don't want to hear that you had a bad day. I don't want to hear that you had a flat tire. I don't want to hear that you had a fight with your wife. I don't want to hear that you had a bad day and the traffic was terrible. When you get in that booth, nobody wants to hear that. Everybody wants to hear what a good time you're having. And I think the Chicago broadcasters kind of have a lineage of that between Harry Carey and Jack Brickhouse. Dave thought of the broadcast and the ballpark as a big party. You know, you always see those pictures of Harry Carey, you know, with his shirt off out in the bleachers with the bleacher creatures out there at Wrigley. And I know he wasn't a Cub fan, as I love to remind him that all the time. That's what it's about. It's about having a good time. That's why we're here together. We can't control if the team is good or the team isn't good. I came up with the line, and he loved it. And I will take credit for it. I said, Dave, I think our philosophy should be we're going to lead the league in fun. And he goes, that's it. That's what. So we said that to each other over and over again, whether it's a bad year or a good year, we're going to lead the league in fun every year. And so far this year, that's been very easy to do.
Yeah, it's been simple. I mean, if you can't have fun with a team that's been doing what the Rays have been doing, there's something wrong with you.
Since you made me cry, what's your favorite story? Update. You always drop that on people in This Week in Rays Baseball. What's your favorite story? Neil, what is your favorite Dave story?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I honestly think, and I think I told this and did cry, when Caitlin did the piece together, and it was the Taylor Walls home run, because he always got out of me to be me and to have fun, and I think I've told the story a million times about how I used to bring notes to the booth, and he pretended it was a forklift, bringing all my stuff in, slammed down on the table, and he said, I want you to just be you because we know you can do this. And it was almost like the aha moment, even though I know you were afraid that I was going to blow my voice out, when he said I was channeling my inner Dave Mishkin. But when it was done and the post game show, before the post game show started, he taps me on the back. He said, that was awesome. And that hits me now, because he wanted me to be me and just let it go. And I think that's something that's going to stick with me from now till eternity.
You know, he called me that night and he said, did you hear that? He did. He couldn't get over it. He loved seeing how pumped up you were about it, because we've wanted that for you for a long time. And I'm glad to hear that is your story. You know, and another thing I want to make sure I point out, Neil, is that as we go around the league, you meet a lot of people in different markets. And Dave was really good at making a connection with our engineers, our fellow broadcasters. Dave was also a big champion of the people that don't get recognized. You know, he liked to mention the clubhouse people. He liked to mention the behind-the-scenes, so to speak, people that don't necessarily get attention. That's why he wanted to bring up Chico Fernandez, and that's why he wanted to bring up Scott Kersey. And that's why when someone might tweet in to us, he wanted to mention their names. Both of us, and you too, we come from the minor leagues, and you learn over the course of time that it takes a very small gesture to make a very big impact on somebody. Why, I don't know. Sometimes we just say their name into the microphone and people get a kick out of it. But he wanted people to feel good around him, and that I think is a really great legacy to leave. His life is too short, obviously, but I do think that over the course of time, people feel good when they hear the name Dave Wills. And I feel very confident that's going to be the lasting emotion once we get by this grieving, which, you know, baseball has a healing quality. I've been saying this over and over again. I'm waiting for it to kick in, because I'm not even close to being healed from the loss yet, and I know his family isn't either, and it's going to take time. I think we're just going to kind of live with that. But I really, again, to repeat myself, I just want the joy to be something that lasts, because I grieved with Dave. You know, I grieved with him the loss of his parents and other friends and other relatives that died over the course of time. And there would always come a point in time when he would say something to the effect of, we got to move on and let's have a good time today. And that's what we're all about.
Well, we need to move on today, but this was a lot of fun. Andy, thanks for coming on.
Of course. Anytime. Always here.
Well, we certainly appreciate the opportunity to chat with Andy about Dave. And obviously this has been quite the weekend here at Tropicana Field, as the Rays have been home. They celebrated Jackie Robinson Day on Friday because the team was on the road when it originally was held. And joining me now is Vice President and Head of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion for the Rays. And that's Stefan Thomas. Stefan, thanks for a few minutes.
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate you having me.
You have had really two busy weekends in marking Jackie Robinson Day, both when the team was on the road and at home. Before we get to what the time at home was like, let's start with the events that you guys held while the team was in Canada.
Yeah, it's really an opportunity that came to us from the City of St. Pete Police Department. They had noticed just a trend of not having access to softball in South St. Petersburg, and came to us with this idea about, can we host a free softball clinic? And we jumped all about that to tie it into Jackie Robinson and his life and legacy, and have over 180 young girls between ages 6 and 14 here at the ballpark to celebrate just the love of the game more than anything else, and be able to create some programs in South St. Petersburg in particular. To me, that really highlights what Jackie was all about.
How important was it to do an event like that? Especially, you did it actually on Jackie Robinson Day, right?
Yeah, it was really magical. I mean, I think just the smiles and the connection and really the positive reactions between law enforcement and the young girls that were participating in the clinic as well. And we're really fortunate that we had, Michelle Smith, a former Olympian, Georgina Couric, who's a phenomenal softball player at USF, and a lot of phenomenal athletes, to be able to invest their time in giving back to the next generation of young softball players.
I'm sure it meant a lot, and it took a lot probably to tie all of that together. Once you got that put together, how well did it go? It sounds like it was a great event.
Yeah, it really was. And I think for us, the most important thing is that we were able to have some of our youth baseball and softball partners. So Berg Baseball here in St. Pete, Wildwood Group here in St. Pete, our RBI Tampa group, to be able to make sure that they have the opportunity to tell the families about what the programs that they're offering, to create some additional opportunities for participation in those programs. So to tie it back into Jackie and to continue his legacy, I think we felt really powerful to be able to be there for him.
Sure. And it was also a time where you guys announced your grant winners, the racial equity grant winners, which you guys have done on an annual basis.
Yeah, this was our fourth year, started after the murders of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery back in 2020, where we give out $100,000 annually to causes fighting against systemic racism. So, on Friday, we are able to celebrate those individual five organizations and the work that they are doing and really feel that this is something that is really just ties in very nicely with what Jackie was about, because these people are breaking barriers in our community, and this is a small church that we can to support with the work that they are doing.
I would guess with each passing year, you're getting more and more applicants, too, for these grants as they're becoming more well-known in the community.
Absolutely. I think we started at a small number, and now we're getting 50 plus applicants for this application process. And for us, the timing ties are nice. We open it up on Black History Month, so starting February 1st through February 28th, and to announce the winners on Jackie Robinson Day and to highlight those individual groups in the ballpark for our Jackie Robinson Day celebration. It just tells a phenomenal story, and I think it ties in really nicely with the day.
Indeed, it does. Can you touch on some of the organizations that won this year and what makes each of them particularly special?
Yeah, absolutely. So the five organizations this year, so we had the United Negro College Fund, the University Area CDC, St. Petersburg College, Police Athletic League of St. Petersburg, and the United Way Suncoast. And in particular, I'll talk about the United Way Suncoast group. So they've been a long partners of ours over at the Campbell Park Resource Center. And in our collaboration with Feeding Tampa Bay, we actually have a food pantry at John Hopkins Middle School. So the students both at John Hopkins Middle School and at Campbell Park Elementary will be able to go to that program. And that resource center also just provides wraparound services. So giving back both on the education front, on the social responsibility front, and making sure that those kids and those individuals have more than one way to find access to the community. So really feel like that type of group is something that creates lasting change in our community.
And the other organizations, are they all first-time winners?
Yes, all of them are first-time winners, and we feel very strong about all of the work that they're doing in our community, both in Pinellas and Hillsborough County. So feel very fortunate to be able to give back to those organizations.
And it's a broad look, because between the Police Athletic League, United Negro College Fund, you're helping kids, you're helping older children, you're helping education, you're helping law enforcement, kind of various levels.
Yeah, and I think we're proud of the fact that we can be intentionally broad in a racial equity grant, whether it's scholarship for kids, whether it's with the Police Ethical League creating opportunities for a reading program, with the University Area CDC focusing specifically on the USF North Tampa area. The reach and the impact and the multitude of services that we feel really great about being able to do that.
Again, we're chatting with Stephan Thomas, Vice President of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion for the Rays. On Friday, you did have Jackie Robinson Day here at the ballpark. We're marked it there since the team was on the road last weekend. So tell us some of the things that you did this year, some that are things you do every year and some that were different.
I think one of the things, even for our staff, we really felt fortunate about is to have Mr. Leon Jackson, who Leon Jackson is one of the last surviving member of the Courageous 12. So back in the 1960s, he was one of the police officers who sued for the opportunity for the black officers to patrol in white neighborhoods. And Mr. Jackson just had an opportunity to share his story with our staff and be able to go into greater detail about some of the challenges that he faced. And I think one of the things that really stood out to me is that at that time, they felt like they were the Jackie Robinson of St. Petersburg Police, being able to fight for the next generation of officers. So having that type of impact and just being able to share those stories and for us to be able to give people their flowers while they're still with us, I think we really feel very fortunate about that aspect for our staff. And in addition to extending that on to our Jackie Robinson Day celebration, where we had Mordecai Walker, who is 98 years old, who is the oldest living resident of the historic gas plant area, to be able to throw out the first pitch for that game. And really for us, we're trying to tell the story of Mr. Walker, and then also having Will Packer, who is from St. Pete native, producer, movie director, also created his own production company, to be able to tell that story of the older generation to the new generation of leaders in St. Petersburg. I think it's just a phenomenal tie-in, and very happy that we can celebrate those individuals on Jackie Robinson Day.
It's a great blend, and especially with, obviously, the work that's being done toward a potential stadium here in St. Pete, to have someone representing the gas plant district and continue to emphasize that history, I'm sure, is important too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think all of those individuals also are being able to talk to our Pointer Rightfield program, which is one of our community partners. And having those young men who are in middle school and high school be able to interview these individuals, and they'll have the opportunity to have those stories published in the Tampa Bay Times. Those are those lasting memories, and these stories will live on forever. And really, the opportunity to connect these individuals and these generations of people really, really feels very meaningful and impactful.
Our listeners may not know a lot about that whole Pointer Rightfield program, but you've been involved with them for quite a while. For those who aren't familiar, what is it, and how important is it that the Rays are connected to it?
Absolutely. So we've been, we'll have launched the creation of the Pointer Rightfield program over 10 years ago. And this is a program specifically for middle school black and brown kids in St. Petersburg, and also extending over to Hillsborough County as well, where they go through a weekly program through the Pointer Institute, where they learn about writing and journalism and poetry and video production and editing. And they're able to interview these individuals, including able to interview a former Rays player and work in our front office, Denard Spann, and they will be able to create these stories with actual professionals who work in the news and entertainment industry, and be able to craft this work. So the program is phenomenal. They've had a lot of success stories. I know Will Packer actually was as a product of the Rightfield Institute back in the day, and he was actually the first speaker at the graduation ceremony. So be able to kind of give back and be able to continue to tell these stories is really very important for us.
And that wasn't all that you did on that night. I mean, what are some of the other things that were highlights for you?
I think for us, more than anything, it's just an opportunity to connect communities and connect people. So we have all of our community partners and elected officials and really, from our Divine Nine historically black college universities, they're out here at the ballpark as well. And be able to just have this opportunity in this space to connect and get back and reflect really on what Jackie meant to us and all that he means to us in the future as well. I think for us, it's very easy to think about the trials and tribulations that Jackie went through back in when he broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball. But how can we use those valuable lessons to extend to the work that we're currently doing right now?
And I would guess to also you guys do a lot of events beyond Jackie Robinson Day and beyond this week too, and beyond Black History Month, to make sure you're connecting with the community year-round.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for us is that we want to make sure that we are being as inclusive as possible to all of our different identities in our community, and making sure that when people come to Tropicana Field that they feel safe, that they feel welcome, and they feel like they belong. And we hope that extends to every aspect of our fan base, and also to our players and everybody in the clubhouse as well.
And I would guess events like these go a long way. I would assume the feedback you hear goes a long way toward that?
Absolutely. And part of it is that the representation matters. I think, being able to see similar faces and similar identities and similar lived experiences through what we do and the stories that we tell has a big impact. So I feel I think it's one thing that we feel proud as an organization that we're able to get back in these ways.
And on the baseball field, we've seen Taj Bradley come up and have two fantastic starts. I'm sure that probably is a really nice thing to see because the Rays have had a history of really successful young black players, whether it's Carl Crawford, who's going into the Hall of Fame this year, whether it's B.J. Upton, David Price, and on and on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been fortunate to be in the organization for 17 years. And, when I first started, having Carl Crawford and B.J. Upton and extending that to so many other great black ball players, and hopefully Taj is in the next line of that as well. But being able to celebrate these individuals and the work that they do and the hard work they put into their craft, it is a very nice thing to see.
Hopefully that continues on the field, and continued success with all the great work you're doing off the field, Stefan. We appreciate some time today on This Week in Rays Baseball.
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate it.
That's Stefan Thomas, again, Vice President, Head of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for the Tampa Bay Rays. You're listening to This Week in Rays Baseball. We'll continue in just a moment. We'll hear from Rays third base coach Brady Williams right after this. You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and our guest right now is third base coach Brady Williams. We appreciate a few minutes. What have the first few weeks of the season been like for you?
It's been awesome. Just the vibe of everybody, really. What comes first, success or confidence? I think it's a little bit of both. There's the guys that are around right now, they're holding their head high, chest out, feeling confident about what they're doing, and it's kind of just going throughout the whole locker room, and it's fun to be a part of.
You've been with clubs that have won before, obviously, at the minor league level. Is that something that's palpable in spring training? Does it carry over? What was the feel like then, and or has it just been different since day one of the regular season?
I think it's just a combination of a lot of things. You know, this group of players has been together for a long time, and there's some new blood coming up, you know, the young guys coming up, and they're also performing well, which obviously helps. But I think it's just the group has been together for a long time, and now there's a lot of familiarity. You know, Cashy does a great job of allowing that to happen, and just coming and being part of it. Like I said, it's been an absolute blast, and it's paying off on the field.
As a third base coach, what are you learning? I know when we spoke in spring training, you were talking about it was first most important to really get to know your guys. How comfortable are you now with all of the position players and what they can do?
I mean, for me, it's been easy because there's been a lot of home runs. It hasn't been a whole lot of tough sends. The offense is kind of clicking, so you're not pressing over there to like force something that's not there. You know, I'm sure there's going to be times this year where there's going to be decisions over there that are going to be tough. But as of right now, it's been a blessing up to this point because the offense is rolling so much.
Last week, I sat down with Chris Prieto and talked about base running. How pleased have you been about some of the things that guys have done? I think in Toronto, when Wander Franco scoring from second on an infield out, I mean, those are the kind of things that normally don't happen with most clubs.
Just extending innings, too. The amount of times that we've beaten out an infield hit to extend an inning. The other day, Mejia had an infield single and then a walk and then a three-run homer. And that's happened numerous times this year. And guys, they're finishing innings. They're not allowing the opposition to catch their breath.
You know, you mentioned it's been easy because of all the home runs. You get the fun of coming up with some creative stuff on the other end of things. How enjoyable has that been, and how important is that?
Just personality. You know, I think the game's changing, and we have to adapt and grow. You're not trying to show up the opposing team by any means. It's just about having fun and for your teammates and for the fans. And to get a handshake or to allow some personality to come out with that player is kind of neat.
When you first and Chris first decided to do the Randy pose when he homered, what did that mean, do you think, and how do you think that also filters down?
I'm not sure. It was just a kind of a play on what has happened in the WBC and how he just resonates throughout the fan base and the locker room. You know, he has a certain aura about him. You got to appreciate that, whether it's good or bad. I mean, I love it. I think he brings a lot to it. And just wanted to bring that out with him. He returned the favor, and I thought it was a good little handshake.
The entertainment aspect of this is important because that's exactly what you guys are trying to do in addition to having fun, right?
For sure. I think you're seeing that. The fans have come out early on in the season to help us and promote like what we're doing. It's a very exciting team, young, talented, from the pitching side and the offensive side. So I can see why the fans want to come out and watch them.
As a guy who managed many years at the minor league level, you're coaching third base too, for the most part, or at most years. When did you start having the fun high fives with the guys, and how did that originate?
I started last year, really, and it was kind of based off of what was going on at the major league level. I mean, they're having fun. Why can't we have some fun down here? And it was to allow the players to kind of grow a little bit. You know, you want to get their mindset of I am really close to the major leagues. I'm not in the, even though I am in the minor leagues. My goal is to get to the major leagues, and I got to start acting like I belong up there. And I think that's just a part of it to get them some personality and loosen up a little bit.
We had Josh Lowe on the program earlier today. He gave us the PG version of your high five or how all that originated. How important is it to be able to relate to a guy like that who you've known now for a few years?
Yeah, I mean, it started with his brother. I mean, Nate and him, we, you know, had been fortunate to manage both of them, coach them, see both of them grow as people and as players. I messed with Josh because I told him that Nate hit harder than him, and he didn't like that too much. And so he came around one day after a homer, and he hammered my hand, and I said I'm not going to do that anymore. We're good with that. Let's start doing a little salute, and so that's where that came from.
And then he said he's doing an L now too.
Yeah, a little L for the low. Just like I said, a little more personality for him. You're seeing him. How I've seen him in the last couple of years, the personality is there, the confidence is there. He's carrying himself the way that he needs to up here.
What does that mean to see guys that you managed told them they were going to the big leagues, now having some success at the big leagues, and look more like the player you saw in AAA than the player who maybe first came up to the majors?
Yeah, it's tough. It was tough for me the last couple of years just because I know how good some of these guys are. And it's not just in organization, guys that are going somewhere else with different organizations where they perform so well in the minor leagues and then they get to the major leagues and struggle. And to see them, a lot of these guys start having success, just tells me how tough it is mentally here. I mean, physically it's very hard, but the mental side of it, just getting over the hump of I do belong here is really important.
I would think that having more familiar coaches can't hurt. I mean, I think three of you were new, but also came through the minors. Three previous year, whether it was Brady North, Dan DeMent, etc., also came up through the system, and they know these guys.
Yeah, the cohesiveness. You know, all of us know Cashy too. We've known him for the last 8 years, and how comfortable that becomes, and how he allows us to do our jobs and help the players be comfortable. It can only help. I don't know how much it does, but to see these guys doing what they're doing, it's awesome to see.
Chatting with Brady Williams on This Week in Rays Baseball. You also work with the infielders a fair amount too. What have you felt about the way the infield is played so far this season?
Extremely well. I mean, it starts with our preparation, starts with how these guys come to work every day. You know, it's a 15-minute routine that I think is, you can't really replicate it any other way. They're coming out here, they're playing game speed for that time, and it translates into the game. You know, from all across the infield, they're making plays for the pitchers and staying locked in.
I think that one thing that Rodney brought in that was new and unique was the rubber balls, and I see you're working with them with a lot of the infielders too. How much do you think that helps an infielder grow and improve?
We always say it can't hurt. You know, that's kind of the way we look at it. Not sure how much it helps, but it can't hurt. It's more like the hand-eye coordination, the different balls, the different feels of the balls. And then the routine of, like, I'm doing something to get better today. And I think, you know, through Walsy or for Rayleigh, Yandy, the guys that have done it, they feel confident when they're playing in the game.
One thing that stands out to me, at least the first few weeks, I think by and large the first base play has been better. There aren't many bad throws, but the bad throws that are made, it seems like our first basemen are handling them.
You're hoping those infielders, you know, take it easy on the first baseman. You know, don't make them work too hard. But they're over there for that reason. You know, when those throws kind of go wide, they're prepared and they've, like I said, they've done their work so that when they do make bad throws, they have their proper technique and they're making the picks. I mean, Yanni's been awesome over there. Rayleigh, who's not really a first baseman, has worked really hard, and he's starting to get more confidence and feel better over there. And so we feel good about both those guys. Just hope these infielders continue to give those strike throws over there.
Have you had a chance to reflect also at what these first few weeks have been like and what it meant to you and your family from opening day to that opening weekend?
I really haven't. I just kind of you get in game mode, season mode, like any other year. You're here to help facilitate, bring a positive vibe, expect to win, and come to the park ready to go every day.
Your dad, I know you were able to, you know, bring out some special guests and some friends and family for him. Has he talked to you much about that? And how often do you talk to your dad just about the game now that you're in the midst of season?
Mostly every day. I mean, he's watching every night. It's one of those things that allows him to look forward to every day, you know, because he's not doing a whole lot now, but that's part of what is part of his day. And I love talking to him. He'll bring up situations or stuff that maybe he saw that he just wanted to kind of ask how things, you know, transpired and discuss situation and talk baseball.
How helpful is that for someone like yourself who's been a lifer in this game?
I mean, you can't. I mean, he's just a sounding board, really. You know, and very fortunate. You know, I say it all the time. He is my dad, but he's also like, he's one of the smartest baseball people I've been around. And that's not being boastful or anything. He's really fun to talk to about the game.
Obviously, you guys have played extremely well, and it's hard to keep up the kind of pace you're on. But for this team to get where it wants to go, what types of things need to continue to happen?
Just continue with what we're doing, really. You know, the energy, the vibe, I think that is, for me, that's always been the most important on any team, is how the dugout is, how the locker room is, because that's always going to translate more on the field. Guys are playing for one another, which they are now. I don't see how we're going to stop.
Certainly appreciate the time of third base coach Brady Williams on the program today, and for that matter, that of all of our guests, outfielder Josh Lowe, for being with us today, as well as my partner on the broadcast now, Andy Freed, and also Stephen Thomas, Vice President of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for the Rays, as we talked about Jackie Robinson Day. On the program next week, we're going to hear from Pete Fairbanks, who just set
a Rays record for consecutive scoreless innings. That and a whole lot more coming up next Sunday. If you ever have something you want to hear, all you have to do is tweet at Neil Solons. Thanks today to Derek Dubose back in our network studios, plus on-site assistance from Chris Miller, Becca Carney, Parker Welsh, and also Alex Fuse. I'm Neil Solons. Stay tuned. The pregame show is next as we get set for the Rays and White Sox on a Sunday fun day on the Rays Baseball Network.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Rays Baseball.
Breaking ball lifted to the air, way up there, into right field and deep. Judge is going back towards the corner at the wall. Gone! And the Rays jump in front 4-1.
If you missed any of the show, catch it at RaysBaseball.com/radio.